Hi everyone, this is Yaro Stark. Welcome to a mastermind group coaching question and answer call. I have Gideon Shawick on the line with me, actually sitting just directly to my left. We're in the same room for actually the first time we've done a call in the same room. We're usually in our respective houses, possibly in different countries around the world, but we're about as close as we can get, almost sitting on each other's laps this time. So the record button has been hit, so this call is now being recorded. If you would like to ask a question, I'll give you some instructions in a moment about the lecture mode, but just to be aware that if you do ask, your voice will be recorded, so you might want to use a fake name or not mention your name, but it's only going to the members of the program, so you can decide whether you feel comfortable using a real name or not. I don't think I have anything important to cover this time. The usual chat room is up. If you went to the teleconferences page at entrepreneurs-journey.com/teleconferences, you'll find a link to the chat room there, and it's already full of, I'd say, a good 20 people who are talking already. We would prefer, though, if you save your questions for the actual live call and just report any problems or chat amongst each other in the chat room. Now, this call is actually the first call where we've done one. It's a general chat mastermind session with all members of all of our programs. So we've got people in here from Blog Mastermind, Membership Site Mastermind, and Become a Blogger Premium. So the range of questions is potentially quite broad. Anything related to internet marketing, profitable blogging, running a membership site, anything on those areas. And pretty much any question you want to ask, as long as it's not too personal, but you can always have a shot and we'll just say, sorry, I can't answer that if it is too personal. So with that out of the way, I'm going to switch over and turn on lecture mode, and we'll get started. Actually, no, before I do that, I'm just going to jump on to some of the forum questions, as I owed quite a few people some responses from last week when we did the topic selection call. So just hold your horses for your live questions. I'll just answer some of these forum ones first. Here we go. The first one from MJ Plebon. Hi, Aaron Gideon. I'm not sure I can make it to the session. If not, here is my question. For affiliate marketing, have you covered how to make a squeeze page, launch it on your blog, complete with an opt-in area, etc.? Have you covered this in your tutorial sessions yet, or is that coming, or is that part of the membership site group? I'm so used to being spoon-fed by your wonderful videos. Just point me to the right direction. All the best. Okay. MJ, we don't really cover in depth the creation of a squeeze page in the sense of, I'm assuming you're talking about a landing page that collects names and email addresses. That's not specifically part of, I mean, it is covered in the sense that I recommend you get one done for Membership Site Mastermind, but it's not in the very clear how-to level detail that Gideon does in the Become a Blogger videos. It's not blogging. It's, you know, you'd have to get a web page created. You'd have to get some copy written and integrate your AWeber code into it. And, you know, that would be a number of videos, I'd say, to even just show you those basic things. You could do it with a blog, but it wouldn't be that easy, and you'd have elements like the sidebar possibly conflicting with it as well. So not something we covered in some depth. It's not covered at all, I believe, in Become a Blogger, is it, Gideon? We haven't mentioned it there.
Well, not in much detail, but we do talk about you know, using something like AWeber to create a form on your sidebar so that you can start collecting email addresses from people and provide them with a free resource if that's what you want to do. But we don't go into detail as such for a squeeze page. In saying that, though, for the Membership Site Mastermind students, the current video that I'm working on for them, I do go into some more detail on the what of putting together a lead generation system for your membership site. And that, of course, includes having a squeeze page for that. So once you watch that video, you'll know the what of setting it up. We're not going to go into the how-to as much for those videos because a lot of that stuff's already online anyway, that you can access through AWeber or other sites. So we're just focusing on the what for that. But that'll give you a very clear picture of what you should be what you should be implementing, and all you need to do then is just to go and do it.
Okay, MJ, I hope that answers your question. You know, ultimately, though, you could always get that squeeze page done by an outsourcer as well. It might be the best bet if you're you know, not too technically minded. We'll move on to Carol's question. Carol has a question regarding topic selection. So here she is. I've just signed up for Become a Blogger Premium, but can't make the teleconference tomorrow. My area of expertise, passion, is copywriting and how to improve your writing skills, both broad topics. My question is, how do I narrow this to a niche that people will be interested in? And once I've determined my niche, what if there are loads of other blogs out there on the same subject? I know that choosing the right URL will help, but that also poses a problem. Use keywords that are too specific to the subject and no one will be typing them in as search terms. All right, there's two questions there, Carol. Let me first cover the domain name one. I would not stress about the domain name issue too much because it's really a secondary consideration in terms of affecting your search results and so forth. You know, you mentioned your keywords there as a concern. The domain name keyword, while relevant, has very little value compared to the keywords in the title of the article and all the articles you write and the title of your blog and so forth. It's nice to get a keyword in the domain name, but I wouldn't stress about it too much. More importantly, what you're asking there about finding a niche, the copywriting industry is interesting because there actually are, I'd say, a shortage of good copywriters. So if you're actually a very good copywriter, you can quite easily stand out there just through the quality of your work. Just writing about the subject will be enough to get you, some sort of status in the marketplace if you're good. And I wouldn't worry about being different because by the nature of your writing style and who you are, you will be different. I'm amazed how many people are sort of scared to enter a popular marketplace because they feel it's saturated. The good thing about blogging, if it is a popular marketplace, that shows that there's actually enough people out there to potentially build a very profitable blog. I mean, how many internet marketing blogs are there out there? And lots of them thrive. You know, the best ones do. I was talking to a friend on Sunday who is, well, he has a passion for, DVD and Blu-ray and LCD television, sort of electronics, entertainment, home entertainment systems. And he just has a ridiculous amount of interest and knowledge on that subject, but he was hesitant to actually go into that marketplace as a blogger because he thought it was just well and truly saturated. And I said, sure, there's a lot of sites out there that cater to this, but having a voice and a unique opinion about what's coming up in the world of electronics would be a very powerful topic for a blog. And all you have to do is just be, a prolific content producer. So give people what they want, have your own opinion, use your own unique writing style and just be consistent and you'd be build up a profile there. And the great thing is if there already is a large market, you've got tons of other websites and blogs out there to go find traffic and bring them to your blog. So I look at that as a plus. The only times where, you might want to consider possible saturation is, when you're looking at too top level a category, for example, website hosting or something like that. And that's the case where you just need to find a sub niche of the main niche. And that, that's how you can distinguish yourself and help create a brand around that. And in the field of copywriting, it's not necessarily, it's top level category and you can certainly branch down. You could be just copywriting for a certain industry or just copywriting for sales pages or squeeze pages or something like that. But, I would just wait. Ultimately with this is the thing I love about blogging. You just blog and see what your audience responds to and just gravitate towards that subject matter. And that will slowly define your niche over time. So don't stress about it at the day one start because you just don't know yet. You have to let your market tell them. All right, Carol, I'll move on from that one and go up to Johan. It's a big one.
Well pronounced, Yara.
Thank you. All right. I'm not going to read the whole question because it's massive. Let me start. There are at least 5 to 6 topics of which I can write either regularly or have at least 20 posts up my sleeve. On 2 of the topics, I can probably write an ebook, self-publishing, but this will take time. I have quite a lot of questions, but since I just started the training, I haven't even introduced myself to this forum. I will probably find the answers to them in the course material during the following months. How interesting is a blog about a medical condition? There is one that I am, alas, very familiar with, and it is also the main drive for finding a way to work from home at my own pace. Let me answer that one first. Yes, medical conditions are, especially if you're helping people to deal with them and solve a very difficult problem. I don't know if you made the call or listened to the recording anyway, Johan, of the topic selection call we did last week. There was 2 criteria. One was either having an irrational passion for a topic. I should say not you, the marketplace has an irrational passion for the topic, or it's painful and people are suffering from it, and they're suffering enough to take action and make a change. Most medical conditions are that kind of pain. So there's definitely a marketplace there if you can help people to deal and potentially even cure that pain. So definitely yes to that one. What is the impact of providing a forum alongside your blog? Overkill or a must-have? Not necessarily mandatory. Definitely don't want to start a forum when you're just starting a blog, because you're going to have trouble building an audience just to the blog itself. I recommend starting forums once you already have a substantial blog audience, because that can translate into the first members of your forum as well. And take it from someone who's had experience building a forum and a blog. Several times I've done several forums and several blogs. Forums are more work to grow than blogs are, because you're dependent on other people producing content and not just yourself. So it's a very challenging thing. So I just stick to the blog for now. What is the best strategy if you can write only a couple of good articles on a topic, still have your own low content blog, or publish it on someone else's blog? Does it pay off as in money, or at least in street credibility? I would just avoid any subjects where you don't have much to write about and just focus on the one subject you do. That's the simple answer to that one. For obvious reasons, focus your energy in one place and do the best job you can on that subject, and you're more likely to succeed. That should make enough sense. No need to explain that, I don't think. So, what are right topics? How much would I like to write articles about Linux and PHP? There are a lot of people who do that already, and writing a technical article does take a lot of time. All right. Not sure exactly what the question is there, but it does sound like you're sort of jumping from topic to topic. So, I would pick one, maybe two, maybe three, and run with those blogs. But you're quite right. We covered topic selection in that call we did last week. So listen to the recording there, and you'll get a much better idea of how to deal with that challenge.
Yeah. Also, just want to say something there. If you are thinking about creating how-to sort of technical articles, that can be pretty good. Yeah, good. They're very popular and people love reading them. And we've really seen that with, and just take the Become a Blogger videos. They're essentially technical how-to articles that we've turned into video pretty much. So you can apply that to blogging as well. And if you're writing stuff that people are looking for and that's useful for them, that's going to help you get traffic as well. So it's a good way of creating content.
Okay. The rest of your questions, Johan, I'm looking, it's very much answered in the call we did and the actual course material. So I'm going to leave what you're asking, because you're asking about how to monetize blog, which is obviously in the program. Okay, here's one we haven't covered. What is the attention span of a blog visitor? You'll find out when you check your statistics what your bounce rate and your average length of time on site. Your Google Analytics account will tell you the average attention span of a blog visitor. It's very, very short, I can tell you that. Hopefully they'll come back every day if you're writing every day, but they'll very likely only spend a minute just to scan your article and leave. But that's okay. As long as you've got some attention and some engagement, you're good. And some of your other questions, Johan, what if inspiration dries up? This is something that some people deal with in the sense of writer's block. I know personally I haven't really experienced much of that. There's always something new to write about if you're engaging in a subject and always having new experiences. So that would be the answer to that question. If you're passionate about something, you should always be learning and doing things within that subject area, so you'll always have something to write about. If you don't, you should go out there and do something. Read someone else's blog, read some forums, see what other people are doing in that market, and that will stimulate lots of ideas.
There's never a shortage of ideas for coming up with content. The issue always is to make sure that it's relevant and useful for your audience. You can always add more detail to whatever you're creating. That's essentially what we do with our membership site models. We create some free content that's really valuable, and people can use that as a standalone thing to help them implement it and become successful at it. But then with our membership sites, we go into much, much more detail and go into case studies, go into examples, and talk about related materials to that lesson. So you never have to run out of content. And as Yara was saying, especially if you've engaged in a topic and you're actually really interested in it, and you're experiencing life, with that topic as part of your life, there's always going to be new experiences that you can be writing about or creating content for. So there's there's plenty of stuff around.
All right, Johan, I'm going to end it there. Definitely listen to the topic selection recording. It was a long call, 2.5 hours. It should give you some focus. I think the key thing there is to have some focus. So move on. We've got two more forum questions, and then we'll move on to the live questions. I just noticed in the chat room someone was asking if this will be recording. Yes, it already is being recorded, so don't worry. It will be on the teleconferences page, which Blog Mastermind, Membership Site Mastermind, and Become a Blogger Premium students all have access to now. You all get the link just to make this call, so you'll get the recording there. This question is from Welly. Hi, Yarrow, Gideon. Since the recording of the coaching call can be accessed freely at the teleconferences page, doesn't that mean people can get a hold of the call recording without having to become a paying member? Good timing for that question, really, since you just mentioned it. Okay. Technically, yes, you're correct. The thing is, it's never actually given to, that actual link is not given to anyone unless you're in a program. So it's true that people could share that link without realizing they're giving away something people pay for. And the same with the forums. In fact, it's happened a couple of times where people have linked to the forum on public sites. If it became a significant issue, I just password protect the site. What I found, though, is most people, there may be a handful of people who access it who aren't paying students. That doesn't worry me too much. It would worry me if it got published on a massive site with a lot of audience. That's when we'd have to put a password or change the address. But so far, and it's been a year now, I think, well, maybe 6 months at least with the non-password addresses, it hasn't been a problem. And it's been a wonderful problem solver for us, because we had a lot of issues with members who just couldn't access pages because they got confused with passwords. So we decided, because of the nature of some of our programs being very introductory, people struggle to, distinguish the difference between a membership site and a forum and a blog. So having less hoops for people to jump through has just made the service more accessible to our members. And I'd rather have more of our paying members comfortably accessing the materials, with the chance that some non-paying people will get access too. But let me tell you a general rule. With people who actually steal content or access content that they should be paying for, most of the time they're lazy and they don't take action on what they learn anyway. So I'm not really concerned about that. It's just something you get used to. If you have a product, some people are going to share it, steal it, etc. What I like to do, though, is support the people who are supporting us. So if you're a paying member and you're actively, participating in our programs, we're going to spend our time focusing on you. So, you're the people we care about the most. Just going to scroll down. Thanks, Gideon. There we go. Last question from the forum. All right. Hi, Yarrow and Gideon. I'm not sure if I can catch up with tonight's teleconference following on my questions. How can we play around with our WordPress theme? Well, that's a very open-ended question. If you go to the theme editor in the WordPress control panel, I'll hand it over to Gideon.
Yeah, that is a very open-ended question. How can we play around with the WordPress theme? Not quite sure what exactly you want to play around with, and I wouldn't actually recommend that you play around with a specific theme too much unless you're a bit of a guru with CSS coding and HTML coding and PHP coding. The way to change your theme on a WordPress blog is just to find a different theme, or to get a professional person who specializes in theme creation or theme design to get that done for you. So I wouldn't actually modify an individual theme that's looking for trouble, because you can stuff up the code and it could crash your site. You don't want that. So just leave the themes as they are. That's my recommendation, unless you're an expert at coding. If you do want to change it, install a totally different theme, or purchase a theme, or pay an expert to get it done for you.
And we recommend uniquebloggdesigns.com if you want something really custom.
Yeah, they're really amazing. In fact, they've designed Yarrow's current blog at entrepreneursuni.com, so the theme for that. So you can check it out. It's really good. They've got some really good stuff there. Moving on.
We can finish off
there. Oh, so is it possible to add some items on the header, like putting the categories menu-like style horizontally, as well as putting the page names? This is if the theme we want to use doesn't have this design on it. The answer is yes. You can pretty much do anything with your themes. Once again, If you're not an expert at this, I wouldn't try it myself unless you want to become an expert at that, but that could take you months, if not years, to get up to the right level to be able to do that properly. The easy way out is just to find other themes that will be close to what you want, or to use someone like Unique Blog Designs to come up with a custom design exactly what you're looking for. Also, how can we put a photo in the header? And last, how to place a position as affiliate ads on our blog. So same sort of answer there. With some themes, it's pretty easy to just change the header graphic. Like the thesis theme, for example, it's pretty easy to just change the header graphic for that. The Unique Blog Designs theme, I'm pretty sure you can do that as well pretty easily. The affiliate theme. You may need to dig around a little bit in their forums to find out exactly how to do that. If you get stuck with something like that, we do recommend you go and visit our members-only forum, and there are a bunch of people there that could help you with troubleshooting some of those technical issues. All right, that's it for Hermie.
Yeah, thank you, Hermie, and also Joel from blogtechguy.com for the smaller design changes, like getting a picture into your blog or maybe adding advertising. He could do things like that for you as well. He's the more affordable option if you do have some money to spend rather than getting a complete custom design done. So blogtechguy.com. And Joel is a great mentor in our forum as well. I don't know if you've seen that, but Joel is answering many of the technical questions in the members forum, and he's well qualified to do so. So Hermie and anyone else who has questions like this, jump in the forums. You can get some great support there. It's part of your membership fee, so make use of it. Okay, that is the last of the forum questions. So now I'm going to switch us over to lecture mode, and we'll get to the live questions. So give me 2 seconds. All right, folks, hand raising is now on. You can press *9 on your Skype dial pad or your phone dial pad, and your hand will be raised on our control panel at our end, which we're looking at right now. There's 5 hands already gone up, so we'll dive straight into the live questions.
Hello, how are you guys tonight?
Good, thank you.
Good, thanks.
That's good. My name's Sammy. I missed last week's live call, and I'm sorry about that. I listened to the recording. The question I have is, I've got about 3, possibly 4 different distinct topics, 2 of which are quite related, but 2 are unrelated. Is it possible on one blog to, if I use my name as the .com for the blog, could I have different pages or different streets or different categories there that people can go into and see the category that they would like? Or would it be smarter, wiser to use 3 or 4 different blogs, each with a name indicating what it's about?
Well, it really depends on what you're trying to achieve there. If you're talking about totally different topics for those pages and categories mentioned.
Let me just tell you. No big secret. Yep. I've been an Avon representative for quite a long while. I've got about 800 people on my downline. I'm getting into the Shaq Lee business. So those are quite related. They're both multi-level marketing. And I believe that I could be able to blog and possibly even get paid membership for newsletters, especially in the Avon end of things. I'm in the United States. And there's nothing like that's ever really successfully been even tried. Now, one is there's a product that Avon has that's good for insect repellent, and horse people use it pretty widely. And so I'd like to kind of develop that kind of as a theme among horse lovers, but it being related to Avon. So it's semi-related. And then there's another topic totally unrelated that a friend of mine has. He kind of buys and resells diabetic testing strips. So probably that needs to be on a separate blog altogether. But because it's not even closely related in any way to the rest of the topics. But the others are fairly closely related. So those three, the Avon, the Shackley, as far as multi-level marketing, and then the product in the horse industry, that, because I'm in horse country, I'm in Kentucky, where the Kentucky Derby is, and, you know, huge amount of thoroughbred horsing and saddlebreds and all that. So I'm in a good area. So
okay.
I just need to develop those things. So that's my thought. And that's a long question, I know, but
okay.
It gives you a picture to what I want to know.
Okay, well, I think the bottom line is that you always do better with a blog if it is more focused on a specific theme or niche. Now, I'm thinking if you're going to be creating one blog that's going to cover insect repellent for horse lovers and also cover diabetic testing strips, that's, you know, that may not work too well, because you're going to be trying to attract two different audiences from two different niches.
Yeah, I can see.
And so that could be problematic. So for that sort of thing, I would recommend, you know, I'm pretty sure Yara would recommend also that you create separate blogs for those different niches. Of course, another way of looking at it is to push the Avon brand and use your blog more as a portal where people can come and read about the different Avon products that you are promoting. So you're attracting Avon people to this particular blog, and on this blog they can read about a whole bunch of different products that you're promoting. So it really comes down to what your strategy is. You know, what is it that you actually want to do with this? Are you interested in building an audience for each one of these different products specifically, or are you interested in just a branding exercise where you're just focusing on something like Avon or is it Shackley? Yara, I'm not sure if you wanted to add anything to that as well.
I agree with everything Gideon's saying. You know, you can use categories for defining not quite sub niches, but obviously different areas, but that would have to all fall under the one category. You know, you couldn't be branching from horses to something completely different within categories of one blog, because that just wouldn't make sense. I'm more inclined to also stick to the one that you're really, really interested in dominating, even necessarily not even starting the other blogs, if you are confident you have the content to dominate that one market, because you'll just do better with this one specialty, the one core strength. So, but, you know,
right,
ultimately...
On that particular point...
Go ahead.
On that one particular point, now, y'all are in Australia, so Shackley is in Australia. Are you familiar with that particular product?
No.
Okay, well, it's big around here to a large degree. It's an old company and all that. It's multi-level marketing, and it's, you know, very good. Not as well known as Avon because it's international, very, very much so. But should the two company products be kept separate on different blogs, would you recommend, or because they're both multi-level marketing, perhaps be on the same blog?
Try and think of it as the benefit for the potential, you know, customer or person reading the blog. You know, think of it in their eyes. So they're coming to your blog for a reason, which is, you know, to solve a problem or to get information about a certain subject. So if you can categorize those two solutions that those companies provide into the one category, then it's okay to talk about them both in the same blog. So, you know, the trick here is don't think about the product itself as being the topic. It's the problem that those products solve, or the need that people are meeting by coming to your blog, that is the category of your blog.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
I do. Yeah. I'll think about it. If I come up with something else to ask in a minute, I'll do so.
Okay.
I think it helped me a whole lot. There is one question on that. Is it best to use, if you're wanting to personal brand, which I definitely do, to use a blog with my name? .com, or should I come up with a more generic descriptive name? Which is the best?
It's a tough one. A lot of people shy away from using their name because they want the potential to sell what they're doing in the future. And it makes it difficult to sell, you know, yarostark.com and have someone who's not Yarostark writing it. I could sell it to my dad because we have the same name, but that's about it. You know, but it's often easier to brand personally if you do use your name. Now, I'm more inclined to go with not using your name if you can come up with something more rememberable. It's great, though, if you do have a funky name, you know, like Seth Godin, you know, it's a good example. And I don't think he's ever going to sell his domain. It's just part of what he does. It's not going to change. If he stops doing what he does, we'll just let the website sit there. So you have to kind of consider your future and what you're doing. But you can very much personal brand yourself without using your name as your domain name. I mean, look, I've done that. I'm still Yarrow's blog. I blog in Entrepreneur's Journey, but very much identified as Yarrow's content. And the good thing about, though, my domain name is I can actually slowly evolve it to bring on other authors and potentially, you know, extract myself from the process altogether if I got quality writers who could continue to satisfy the audience. That's an option for me. It would be a lot harder to do if I was at yarrowstark.com. So, you know, consider that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem. All right, next caller.
Question. I have several publications that I have written over the years, as well as hundreds of white papers. And I'm more interested at the moment in getting critical mass to my blog site over the next year or so before I start trying any really kind of marketing, because I need to add much more substantial content to make it worth to anybody out there. But there's one area that I'm very interested in doing, and I'm not sure how to do it under the theme or themes that I've looked at, mostly the free themes, and that is something I see coming off of your page, and that is the ability to address that I have publications and information that is available for anyone who checks off on the publications I have. Then I want to be able to respond back with them in an auto response mode or whatever, saying to confirm your email address, and then point them to a page where they can download one or more of the publications that they so have indicated for. And then I'd like to take it to another level, because that's really the first level, what I call opt-in. I want to take it to a double opt-in stage, which is for them to identify specifically what tracks or what specific focus areas do they want for future kind of information should it become available. How can I accomplish that?
Okay. The first part's easy enough. You just need to use AWeber to manage your email list and, you know, stick the opt-in box on your blog, if assuming it's on your blog, and decide, you know, are you going to focus on giving one main resource, which often works better because it's less distracting and will tie in hopefully with the subject of the blog. And when I say that, I mean you can offer more than one resource, but the main offer when you see the blog for the first time, it's pretty clear. It might be a pop-up box or, you know, some sort of fade-in box that says, you know, download the free report that, you know, helps you to solve this problem, enter your name and email. And from there, though, the second part, you know, if you went through that process, by the way, it'd be, you know, enter your name and email. They'd get sent an email asking them to double opt in, confirm their link, and then they click that. They'd send a second email, then in that email would be a link to a page to download that report. Now, on that page, you could actually include additional resources if you want to give them away there, or you could, you know, create separate lists, one list for each resource. You know, for example, if you check out my blog, I have an opt-in in the top right corner for the Blog Profits Blueprint, which is one email list. Then also a footer pop-up will pop up if it's the first time you've been to my blog, offering my report on membership sites, and that's a separate list, and both of those reports go take people to separate email lists. Now, the second part of your question, though, is a bit more tricky. You know, you're asking people to actually identify what additional sources of information they want. That can be automated. It just would require some coding. You'd have to get someone to create some sort of tick box selection area where they can, you know, basically, here's just the off the top of my head idea. So there's a report on your blog that they want to opt in for. They click a link, like they click the picture of the report, for example, and it takes them to a form they fill out to download that report. On that form, you may also have boxes where they can tick and say, you know, what subjects are you interested in receiving more information about? And that's when you can have the additional ways of collecting that sort of information. And then when they enter their name and email, their entry in your database would be flagged as requesting information in those areas. And you can get quite, I don't think you could do it with Aweber because they're very particular about what people are opting in for. But if you had your own email list service or maybe use the more high-end service, you could actually have a person go onto different lists based on what boxes they ticked for additional information. And that's what you'll see. I don't know if you ever heard of, what's it called? Co-registration leads, which is basically where you might opt in for a report on how to make money, and then you're also given these other possible subjects to tick boxes for: how to invest in property, you know, how to invest in the stock market. And if you tick those boxes, you basically join completely different lists, often from completely different companies. It's just a way of generating more leads from that one conversion point. So there are ways to do it. It just gets more technical, the more options and the more, you know, information you want to collect from people.
Does Aweber allow you to integrate into any theme you choose, or do you have to have specific themes out there that only will work with Aweber?
You can use Aweber with any theme. Basically, the way we do it, the simple way that we do it, is to simply use a little widget, a text widget, inside our sidebar on our blogs. And we just copy the code that Aweber gives us for the form, and we paste it into a text widget in our sidebar. And that basically takes care of everything for us. So it's pretty straightforward.
Aweber is a 30, you can get it for a 30-day trial, and then there's a cost involved thereafter. And I know that that's a product you've been pushing, and it's a good product. I've looked at it. My question is, if you just want to venture down that area and look at other products, are there any freeware products that one can look at that are maybe not as robust as Aweber, but are just as good for someone who's new to this part of the world?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, because I know this, you know, the cost is can be quite significant, especially if you're just starting out. I just had a friend yesterday that talked to me about it, and you know, he was concerned about the cost, you know, paying $19 a month US just to have access to that list and that functionality. But what I told him was that you know, if you're serious about building a long-term business, you're going to have to pay for something like this. It's an essential service if you want to become successful at this game in the long term. That doesn't mean you've got to use it right from the beginning. I would recommend it because the sooner you can start building your list using a service like that, the better. But you can use some other, I guess, free options. The issue with that is that if you're sending stuff from your own server and you get a spam complaint on your server or about your server, that could wipe out your ability to be able to communicate with the people on your list. And that's why you use a service like Aweber, because you know, they are specialists in this area, and they make sure that they fully comply with spam compliance codes and rules, and they tick all the boxes on that side of things, so you don't have to worry about it. And of course, when you send an email through them, you don't send it from your own server. They send it from their servers that are a lot more robust than just a single your own server. So, you know, that's why we recommend something like that.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Aweber is a little bit like Constant Contact. They're still going to take you down if the list that you provide to them is a list that you have not solicited, or, you know, is still unsolicited, and they get wind that you want to send out a message to 500 people or whatever, and these are not people that you have already confirmed as potential people that are interested in your product. They'll shut you down as well and not take your service. So what's the difference between that and pushing out to any list that you want to?
Right. I mean, that's why we do recommend – that's another reason why we recommend something like Aweber, or GetResponse is another one. They're a little bit cheaper, like a dollar a month cheaper or something like that. But with them, you have the ability to use what's called a double opt-in method for getting people to sign up to your list. And that just means that people have to confirm the email addresses, and that gets, you know, that gets rid of all the spam complaints. So when you do send that person an email in the future, they would have had to go through this double opt-in process before you could send them any more information. So that gets rid of all your spam complaints, basically.
Almost all.
Good. Almost all of them.
For any of your users, I use a tool that's pretty inexpensive that allows, if you have a list and you want to scrub it, that allows you to ping the addresses without sending them an email so that you can continually scrub your email list so that you don't get undeliverables coming back when you broadcast out to your list.
Right. And see, that's something that AWeber does automatically as well each time it sends.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great thing about it. You know, bear in mind, too, if you're taking an existing list that you have built with something else like Constant Contact or something like that, or any off-the-shelf freeware or shareware script for building mailing lists, so you've got basically a list of emails and names, AWeber won't let you import those unless you can prove somehow that they're double opted in. So in most cases... Right. You basically have to start from scratch if you built your list through someone else.
I've already experienced that. We're Constant Contact in its early days allowed you to do that, but they're all cracking down on it because they don't want to be shut down on their servers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They'd rather say no to one customer, so no problem.
Thank you.
Okay, next caller. Hi, caller, you're live.
Yes. When you're having a sales page that is, and it's a, can you attach it to the blog or to the same domain that the blog is in, or do you have to have another domain for the sales page that you're going to send them to from your blog?
You can do either one of those options. So this is more a decision on branding. You know, if you want the blog domain name to be associated with the sales page for whatever product it sells, which is great if you've got, let's say, an ebook, you know, Mexican cooking secrets revealed, and you sell an ebook on that, you write a blog on that, and you have a membership site on that, then it's fine to have them all in the same domain name. However, if your blog is used for other purposes, you might want to have it on a different domain name to the actual product, which is obviously where the sales page would be. So it is a branding decision. There's no technical limitations there whatsoever, though. It's completely up to you.
Okay. Can I ask another question?
You sure can. Go ahead.
The blog that I just put up has a opt-in box above the fold in the right-hand sidebar, and it also has an opt-in box at the bottom of the page. Is that overkill there, or should I just have the one before the fold at the top?
That's definitely not overkill. You can put as many as you feel like testing. I mean, the answer to your question is actually to see which one gets you more opt-ins, more conversions. You know, in my case, I've got an opt-in in the top right corner as well as in the footer, and what you can do is just check which of those which of those pages is getting, or which of those locations is getting more opt-ins, and you know, is there actually a correlation between the two? But you know, off the top of my head, I very much doubt removing one is going to reduce or the other one. So very likely it'll be more opt-ins if you have both.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Thank you. Next caller.
Hey, Arlo and Gideon, it's Keller Hawthorne. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Keller. Good, thank you.
Hey, Keller. How are you?
Good. You kind of touched on this already with the previous caller, but I kind of wanted to dive into it more. I'm having trouble with this whole idea of either doing personal branding of your blog and all of the social networks that go along with that, or doing a name. Now, of course, I've already started my blog and I have a name for it. But I'm starting to see more and more that the big name bloggers all use their names, and I don't really plan on necessarily selling this blog in the future. So I'm wondering if I should switch over now to a personal name and start really promoting myself as the brand. And I'm wondering if, like Yarrow, I know that you have Entrepreneur's Journey. Are you keeping it that way because you plan to sell it one day, or what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm well and truly encumbered with where I'm at, so changing my domain name would hurt too much to do that. And it wasn't a strategic decision to start with because I didn't know my blog would become what it is. It was purely, oh, I want to write about stuff. Entrepreneur's Journey, that's what I want to write about. Cool, I'll just go with that. It's a terrible domain name. It's got a hyphen in it, and it's got a word that people can't spell as well. So, you know, bear in mind, look at, let's say, Brian Clark. He runs copyblogger.com. Now, you know, not everyone knows copyblogger.com is by Brian Clark, but most people who've read it for a while know that that's the main face behind the blog. Problogger.net, you know, who's that? That's, you know, right. Darren Rouse. So right. You don't have to feel obligated to use your name. In fact, it can be a good thing not to, because it gives you, I guess, scalability beyond yourself. Because you may feel that now that you want to be the main face for a long time, but you will tire out. It's a guarantee. You can't do anything forever. So just having the option to bring on more writers, it just makes more sense. But, you know, listen, johnchow.com has got plenty of guest posts put on there as well. So, you know, the domain can become a brand regardless of what words are used in it, even if it is someone's name. It really is not a major concern here. It's the actual content that will define the brand ultimately. So don't get too hung up on this decision. Most importantly, try and get a domain name that's brandable, rememberable, easily exchanged between people through word of mouth, easy to spell, easy to say on a podcast live, so you can do it in interviews. That's really the concern. So if your name is johnchow.com, that's great, because that is easy to say, easy to remember, and so forth. You know, Gideon von Skalkwyk. No, that's a challenging one to, you know, remember and say on a podcast. So we're trying to get Gideon. What was the one you got, Gideon Live?
Well, there's a few that I've gotten up. I'm going through a similar sort of stage right now to think, you know, should I create a blog? I've got a number of other blogs, but, you know, should I create a personal blog as well, where I'm basically blog about whatever projects I'm working on or whatever I want to talk about. And yeah, the domain names that we're looking at is Gideon Live or Gideon Shelwick, which is the shortened version of my surname. It's easier to spell as well. But the bottom line,
a lot easier to spell.
A lot easier. Yeah. So I think Ciara says, you know, maybe it's only an issue right at the beginning, but as your blog grows and as you add content, that becomes less of an issue because you're going to start ranking for all sorts of different terms in Google and other search engines. And the name of your blog will become, yeah, like its own little brand in itself. So then, you know, then it doesn't matter too much whether it's your own name or another name for your blog. But yeah, I guess at the end of the day, it's going to come down to personal choice then if you're not 100% sure which way to go. I'm starting to lean towards not using my own name, and the main reason for that is so that I can whenever I create something, I try and look at it as an asset that I'm creating that I can then later on either leverage or sell. And so if I'm using my own name, that's going to be a little bit harder to do. Not impossible. I mean, John Chow is that a good example that we've looked at there. If it can become a brand on its own, then you could get other guest bloggers to post on there or get someone else to run it for you. But it will be harder to do.
Okay. Well, I've got rankings and I've got PageRank, and I was thinking, okay, geez, if I'm going to do the switch, it would probably be now better than later. But at the same time, I've already acquired some traffic and some positions in Google and stuff. So I was struggling with it. And then I think one of the areas that constantly reinforces this issue for me is whenever I look at my social networks. I have, you know, a Twitter account that's under my blog name. And then I have a personal one that I created when I just started and I've never used it. I have like one follower on it, but I use, you know, my business one, my blog one for everything else. And then Facebook, it's actually my name. It's not my blog name. So, you know, it's starting to get confusing. All of these social networks, they're attaching my personal name or the blog name to it. And then I have friends complaining that I shouldn't be posting things about my business on my personal Facebook page and yada, yada. I'm just confused as to what would be best. At least social network-wise, if people want to contact you through Twitter and all that, should you go with your blog name with that, or go with your personal, if you've decided to make your blog not your name? Did I make that too confusing?
No, I totally understand. You know, if you already have traction with the blog, I don't think you should switch. It's just going to distract you from maintaining that momentum and building upon it. I would not worry if people complain that you're putting, you know, business content on a personal Facebook page, et cetera. Just, you know, keep your unique you in the content you produce, and don't worry about what label is put on top of it. People will figure it out eventually. And the best, really, if you want the best way to get the longest traction, the name isn't as important as the face and the style associated with it. So use your photo if you can. You know, if you, that means you have two brands, which is, you know, your blog written by your name, that's okay. That gives you the flexibility to use your Facebook page with your name, or to set up a fan page for your blog, or do both. So, what I do recommend is a very small amount of things you do, and focus most of your energy. So really put the time in the blog, you know, maybe just Facebook and maybe just Twitter, and just, you know, use those three, one account in each service if it's just you running these things, because you'll get more results putting, you know, 10 tweets a day to one account rather than 5 to 2 accounts.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, I've noticed Facebook and Twitter are not only the easiest for me to keep up with, but I've found them to be the best and actually pull in results. But I was thinking about creating a fan page on Facebook and didn't know if I should even bother or not, so I don't know.
It depends. This is a resource allocation issue. You know, you can decide what's going to get you the best results quickest. And, you know, I hate to say it, but
right.
Best result I've ever had is to just keep putting out great blog articles. Take away Facebook, take away Twitter. My business is not going to be significantly worse off. Take away my consistent blog writing and my email list, I'm screwed. So, you know, It's pretty clear that you want to be focusing on those two elements, in my opinion. Now, the social media experts out there would disagree with me, because their specialty is Twitter or Facebook, but, you know.
Or YouTube.
Yeah.
That's another kettle of fish.
Okay. Thank you so much, you guys. You were always extremely helpful. I appreciate it.
No problem, Keller.
Thanks, Keller.
Thank you. Speak to you soon.
Hi, this is Darla from Toronto.
Hi, hey, Darla.
Can you hear me? First of all, happy birthday, Yarrow.
Thank you, Darla. Thank you.
I read about that. And thanks, Gideon, for your support on the video. My first slide video there, it was sort of scary. But
I'm very impressed. I think you did a really, really good job.
Anyway, my question, sorry I missed this call last week about finding a topic. I have a question, sounds negative, but I think it's positive because it relates to resource allocation. I just want to know when and how should you evaluate whether you should just continue a particular blog. I'm not talking about Many Hattie Returns, because I'm going to keep going on that one. When I started blogging, it was before Yarrow and Gideon, it was on Blogspot. It was about international financial reporting standards and big time coming to Canada, big conversions. US was going to adopt it, so on and so forth. And I started it and I got very good exposure. I did some guest posts. I had a funky name called the IFRS Exorcist. And a lot of offers to do stuff pro bono. And I had set some objectives for the blog to educate myself on the topic, to get some profile and to get some consulting engagements. Now, the recession came along and the consulting engagements, in fact, did not materialize because people were cutting back. The exposure, the other objective of my learning that did help, and I did get some profile But now the Americans are dropping out of it. And I could say, well, let's just make it a blog on international financial reporting standards because people really look up to me and respect my writings in the area because I have background in the subject. So, but the Americans are, looks like they're not going with it. So the markets change. I don't believe I'll have the traffic without the Americans, notwithstanding the fact that the Canadians have to do it. I find the biggest buzz comes from the Americans. They really love me. You know, majority of my readers are Americans. So I've sort of put the thing on hold for, I'm just sort of deciding, I've got a site now called IFRS News and Views, and it's a very attractive site, and I posted a few technical articles on it, and I'm kind of stuck as to whether just to leave it in limbo and just get a feel for where the market's going, or whether just to get out of it altogether. I'm enjoying the Hat blog, and I'm making some progress on that, and I really like to do that. I think come hell or high water, I'm going to make a go of that.
Darla, you do not sound very excited about this old blog at all. It sounds to me like you're trying to justify giving away a baby here. You're just feeling
well,
like
well, I think you analyzed it correctly. I don't want to make this sound negative because I know a lot of people on the call are new people and they're all gung-ho. And to me, it's like, you know, you buy a stock, you know, a broker sells you a stock and you say, oh, I really love that stock. And you have certain objectives to it. They don't turn out. Things go badly. You still say, I really love that stock. I still think it's going to do something, isn't it? And there's no criteria sort of set at the beginning for evaluating it and re-evaluating it. And you're sort of telling me the biggest thing is enthusiasm.
Well, it's a key component for sure. If you don't have enthusiasm, it's going to show in the blog and you're going to not build an audience. You know, this is an important question for everyone here is deciding when to stop a blog. I think the three questions to ask, well, two questions. One, obviously, is what we've covered. Are you still enjoying it? Are you still passionate about going out there and researching and writing and growing and marketing and so forth? That's a personal question. The second one is whether you've actually done enough testing so far to determine whether the marketplace is there to support the blog and it has a future. Now, this is where most people go wrong. So they may have enthusiasm, but then they lose the enthusiasm because they're not getting any readers. And that's usually not because of anything more than a lack of consistent effort to build a good blog, to do everything we talk about. So, you know, you can decide after 6 months of blogging that your blog's going nowhere, but all you've done is write, you know, 20 articles and you haven't, or maybe even 50 articles, but you haven't actually gone out there and marketed it to anyone. So you can't really say conclusively whether there is a market. If on the flip side, you've actually spent 3 months writing an article a day, you've done some guest posts, you've done some podcasts, you've you know, linked your blog and created a profile in a forum. You've done reasonable effort. It doesn't have to be tons, but at least one piece of marketing a day, and it's still not really gaining traction. And that's you should have a gut level feeling there. Well, I think I've really put in a good show here. I'm not going to continue with it. That can be that criteria, or the criteria can be simply that I do not want to write about this anymore. I do not like this subject. I'm enjoying my hats a lot more. Let's pour all my effort into hats because that's just where I'm keen on growing things. Now, this is a very variable decision, though, because everyone's coming into it from a different point. You know, some of us have a need for money tomorrow to keep living. Some of us, you know, have 6 months buffer, 12 months buffer. Some of us have a part-time job, so we can keep doing it for as long as it takes to make it become a reliable source of income. And some of us can just test projects based purely on whether we want to do them or not, and not you know, when it makes money, it makes money. It's not a pressure point for us. So these things all weigh up into your decision-making process, but just remember, you can sell a blog at any time if it's got content and a bit of traffic. So, you know, don't be afraid to exit and move on to another project. Just don't do it prematurely. That would be my advice to everyone. For you, Darla, I think you're the best person to answer this question, though. I think by asking it, hopefully you've got a better feel for what you really do feel about the blog. And, you know, hopefully you've got a gut level feeling about whether you want to keep writing for it or not. I know for the blogs and websites I gave up, it was pretty clear. You know, I had reservations that I was giving up on something that could be good, but I knew my heart wasn't there and I wanted to go to other directions. So and even if you don't even know what the other direction is, you know where it's not. So, you know, that could be a pretty clear guide for you.
Yeah, it's like giving up a baby, as you say, but it has led to other things. It led to, you know, coming to you guys and finding some other opportunities. So it's not entirely negative, but it's not producing the results. I set objectives for it over a year ago, and the objectives have not been fully met. So you have to say, well, was it me or was it the objectives or is it the market? So I'm kind of looking at all of that right now.
Or just do nothing. Just let the blog sit there for a while and write on the other blog.
That's what I'm doing now. I've actually put it on ice since May because I'm trying to get a read for the market. The Americans haven't made a decision yet, although they were going to. They got comments in April. They take a long time. The Canadians haven't started really looking at it seriously, although they're supposed to do something by January of next year. And I'm wondering whether the right people were reading the blog, although I believe I had good content. I get a lot of good feedback on what I write. It's a lot of effort to write that particular blog, more so than the hats. So you sort of say, well, is it worth the effort? I'm semi-retired, but I only have a certain amount of time I'm going to put into various projects. You know, I have to allocate it like everybody else, because otherwise you might just as well do nothing. That's not an option for me, by the way, but, you know, one way it is not. So, you know, I have to look at these things, and I just was interested in your views on it. And I guess it's sort of some, you know, if you were going to sketch it out, you'd have some kind of flow chart with all kinds of yes, no answers. But in the end, I think you're right. I think it's just your gut feel.
Yeah, Dalla, I mean, I could probably, I guess, add another dimension to that and another way of looking at it. So I'm from a high-tech industry background, and a big part of my work was to figure out the commercialization of new technologies. And I've often thought that the process of commercializing new technologies is very, very similar to that of making a blog successful. And what happened back then in that industry was that you know, we'd get investors investing in different projects, and you know, these venture capitalists would normally say that out of 10 new startup companies that they invest in, you know, 8 of them won't go anywhere, and 2 of them might show something, and then 1 of them will actually be a resounding success if they've done their job right. And I think it's similar with blogging. You know, obviously, I don't have the same sort of numbers and I haven't done the research for that, but I think it's same sort of thing there, the 80-20 principle, where, you know, if there's 10 blogs, it's going to be 80% of them that's that may not perform for whatever reason, and 20% of them will actually pull through. And it's just a matter of finding those right blogs and the right topics to blog about and to build that audience for those blogs. And the other thing, of course, is just pure persistence, really. You know, Yaro's entrepreneur's journey didn't take off until he didn't really see anything significant until about 6 months of creating content every single day for it. Sometimes you can strike it lucky. I've been lucky with one of the previous blogs that I've just started about 3 months ago. We've been able to get traction there. But we, you know, we've targeted a market where we know there's a lot of people really interested in that content. It's difficult in a way, because you know, some blogs are just not going to go anywhere. That's just a fact. and some blogs will. And it depends on a lot of different factors. And, you know, we talk about passion as a big thing, you know, something that you, if you can blog about something that you're interested in, that's certainly going to help you pull through the tough times. And whereas other people would give up. So that's one of the key things we talk about. But obviously, you do need an audience as well, people who will be coming back to your blog time and time again and writing comments and telling their friends about it. So, and then, of course, there's the whole content creation thing, making sure that you've got the right sort of content that, that people want to make them want to come back. So there's a number of things. But, yeah, it's tough when you're working on something that doesn't go anywhere and it's your baby and you want it to go somewhere. Yeah, I know what you feel like.
Okay, well, you know, I'll do what you say. That's what I've done anyway. I'm gonna put the other blog on hold, and you know, I have some other ideas and so on. And as you say, you hit something sooner or later, right? And I'm gonna keep the hat blog is going regardless, and the traffic's moving quite well on it, to tell you the truth.
Well,
it's just a question of plugging away, and I'm conscious of content. That's why I'm learning the audiovisual stuff, and you know, that's what people are looking for. They're not looking for me to write about it; they want to see it.
And I really do like your hat blog, Darla. I've went there quite a few times, and I just love the video that you did last time. The whole way that you put together the music and the images, I could tell that's something that you're passionate about, and I think that'll show through, you know, when people come visit your blog. One thing I'd recommend, if you've probably thought about it already, but it's to start building your list for that, you know, to put an option
like
box there.
Yeah, I was wondering what to provide as a premium. That's what I'm struggling with. I could just say, please sign up to my list, but, you know, to come up with a nifty little premium. So I'm racking my brains on that. I was thinking videos, some interesting.
You know,
videos.
The best thing, Darla, if you can come up with is discount pricing on hats. Everyone loves a bargain. So if you could,
Do that. I could start a club discount. A lot of milliners are interested in participating. I'm interviewing one on Skype actually on Friday. That's just my first interview, to tell you the truth, on Friday.
Well, we've got a few people asking what your website address is in the chat room, so you just want to say it. We put it in there. But
Many Hattie, Hatty, returns.com. It's like Many Happy Returns. Instead, it's Many Hattie, Hatty, returns.com.
Very clever.
Anyway, I've been doing a lot of talking. Keep occupied, but I think people should set objectives and evaluate them periodically. That's what I would suggest, based on my experiences.
Good stuff, Darla. That's a good point. Yeah, very, very businesslike.
Yeah, I'm a chartered accountant, after all.
There you go. See, there's a problem.
Okay. Bye, then. Thanks.
Thanks, Darla. Bye. Speak to you soon.
Bye, Darla.
Bye, Gideon.
All right, next caller.
Hello, it's Veronica here. My question is about affiliate marketing. Now, I've set up my first blog. I've still got a lot of work to do on it. And now I'm doing it through ClickBank, and I want to look for my next product. What I want to know is, if I'm focusing on affiliate marketing, roughly how many products should I be looking at? And that's the first part. And the second part is this. Do I choose products which are completely different from each other, in that I'm tapping different markets? I can see the value there. Or do I choose products which may be in some way related, which would cut down enormously perhaps on the research time? Okay,
yeah,
that's
definitely.
What I'm...
The more aligned the strategy is here in terms of a topic, the better. So ideally, you'd have a blog focused on fish tanks. You'd then get them onto an email list focused on fish tanks. And then you'd sell them affiliate products all related to fish and fish tanks. So that would convert the most. That would make the most sense. And that would be the easiest for you to set up. It's very linear. So that's that's really my advice there. So I don't know what your blog topic currently is, but in affiliate marketing, you know, if you're covering a subject, you usually have a broad range of areas you could go into in terms of affiliate products to sell. But the best way, and that you'll make the most money, is if you actually just build a list who have one problem they want to solve, and then you give them very specific related products to solve that problem. You know, mine's a classic example. The blog is about internet marketing, but the email list is very much about blogging. The products that sell the best for me are the ones that are specifically about blogging and making money with blogs. That they will always convert the best because that's the reason why people join the email list. So if you're going to ClickBank, just pick the handful of best sellers and test them one by one on the blog. And, you know, to make this easy for you, you really should just automate it. So just focus on creating a great blog, build a list around that blog, and then just have an automatic follow-up email that promotes a product. I don't know if you're on my list, the free one I have. If you join the Blog Profits Blueprint list, you'll see there's a sequence of follow-up emails. One of them is a link to a review of the Desperate Buyers Only ebook, which is sold through, I think it's pay.com. And that one will continually sell as people go through my list. So there's about $300 to $500 a month, just repeat income from that. Just because people join the list, they get the emails over the next 30 days and onwards, and then they get that review eventually, read the review, and a proportion of them buy that book. So I had to write the review, I had to read the book, and I had to put the email in my follow-up sequence. But once that was done, as long as I keep getting new people joining that list, it continues to make money. So that's a very typical affiliate marketing strategy at the moment.
Okay, thanks very much.
No problem. Does that help it?
Yep. Now that answers it.
Okay, great, Veronica. Thank you. I lost a caller. Well,
Hi, Yarrow. It's Michelle in Melbourne.
Hey, Michelle.
I apologize if my 2-year-old comes into the conversation, but I've run out of chocolate frogs for him, so I'll try and be quick. My question relates to timing the launch of a membership site. I'm wondering, say it's a 4-month membership and over that time it falls into December and January, do you think that would impact on attrition given that time of year?
It might, but that's not a good enough reason to push back a launch, because you could do it and then you could reopen it again at a better time in the next year. So I wouldn't let that stop you.
Excellent, thank you. And one other question. I suppose you would have some data on this. I'm thinking about a 2-month membership at $50 a month versus 4 months at $25 a month. Is it likely that if someone stays in for 4 months, they're maybe going to be a longer term, I don't know, follower and maybe buy into other products than if you just had a shorter option over 2 months? Or I suppose my first thing is really about trying to stop the attrition being too high. So is a shorter, say, 2-month membership likely to be better?
Well, let me tell you one fact. The more times a person is billed, the more likely they are to leave. So yeah, the price not as important as the number of times they're billed. So if you do break it down to 4 payments, you're more likely to lose them on the second or third payment, as opposed to the second payment is only the second payment, and then that's it, they're done, right? So yes, if your choice is 250s or 425s, I'd be more likely to go 250s. But when you're talking about such short periods, you know, a 2-month membership site, it's not a membership site, that's just a 2-part payment. So I would, I'd consider actually having 2 options. You can buy the entire program up front for 77, or you can pay two payments of 47 over 2 months, and that would be the way to structure something like that.
Okay, all right. So just on that, with 2 months being not really a membership site and offering like buying the entire content, that would mean me producing the entire content before, which sort of sounds easy enough if it's only 2 months, but I guess it probably really is 4 months, allowing me to build content on the hop. I'm trying to balance putting it off and creating all the content and just doing something like a 2-month, you know, you can't really call it a membership then, I guess. But
I mean, we're talking about labels. If you need the time to prepare the content, if that's your reason for breaking it down, you know, be realistic with how much time it's going to take you. And if it is a 4-month thing, you may even want to say, okay, I'm doing a 6-month program, and it will be for the first time I run it. I don't know why you chose $25. I think anything, you know, I think 47 should usually be the lowest, and depending on what it is, you can go as low as $9.95 for a very simple product like a CD of the month club or something like that. But you know, if you do 6 months, then that gives you the time you need to create the content. You'll get people on 6 months, except the fact that you're going to lose some of them with attrition on, you know, month 2, 3, and 4, and 5. Usually 2 and 3 will be the biggest attrition. And once you've done that, though, the second time you're open, then you can do both options. You've got the pay one fee of $250 or pay $50 a month for 6 months. And then you'll really notice how much easier that second launch is, and how much quicker the money comes, because a lot of people choose to buy the upfront option. So look at the first launch more like the money is important, but it's actually of equal importance to developing the course and creating a good program. So even if you lose half your members, you know, hopefully you won't do that. What's important is you'll find out why they left, and you can fix that problem for the relaunch. That's the really important thing.
Okay. So just on like the idea of 6 months, I joined a membership site when it was first started, and it followed a similar idea, only it's not exactly your method, but very much the content was being generated on the hop. And for what it was, like month one for me was just nothing. It was no use to me in terms of my skills. But, you know, month 4 and 5, when it finally arrived, was really valuable. And it frustrated me. And a lot of people who joined, you could hear it in, you know, the forum, like, oh, how do I get month 4? Because, you know, this isn't suiting me. I know how to do all this setup stuff. And people seemed taken aback by, oh, the content's not produced. Now, for me, in membership site Mastermind, I'm so far behind in terms of, because I'm still building preeminence, that it's, you know, and there's so much content that it's brilliant. But in that other example, and it's probably likely to be in my type of what I could offer over 6 months, people would be, you know, foaming at the mouth going, come on, I need, you know, month 3 now. This is way too easy. It's too slow. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've tried to balance that, you know, where your feedback in beta was it was too slow, whereas for me it's way too fast. So you can't please everybody. And maybe it just depends on what market you're in, perhaps.
It also depends on
I'll try and mute me in between, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I'd like a chocolate frog too.
me too.
With Blog Mastermind, I had that exact problem. People left the program because it was too slow and too easy to get through the first month's content. And I hadn't written more than the first lesson. And it was while I was creating one lesson at a time. So what happened was I lost those people. It was just the way it was. It was a learning experience. And what it taught me was how important the positioning is on these sort of things. You need to consider, first of all, who is your primary customer, who is your primary person you're trying to meet the needs of, and focus on that, accepting the fact that you'll lose the slow people and you'll lose the quick people because it's too slow or too quick, the opposite of whatever they want. However, you've got the option in the second time around to satisfy all groups of people because you'll have the slow and the quick option for each group. And also understand that with positioning, it's you should lose some people. That's the point about this. You're trying to isolate to find the best customers, which means you have to lose the ones who are not appropriate for what you're doing. If there's a very massive dropout, and this is what I was concerned about. It was my first membership site. I didn't know what was expected. Like I was, you know, 10%, 20%, 30%. What was the attrition I should have had? And I was scared of it. So I thought, I got to do something now to fix this. And that's why I made a series of 5 advanced lessons to try and, you know, keep people in the program who were advanced and weren't patient enough to wait through the early lessons. Now, it's important to realize when I did that, it wasn't so much that the content I was giving them was that much better, in the sense that they're getting more advanced topics early if they wanted it. What was important was I was acknowledging the problem they were having with the program. Most people just want that. They want to know that the person they're buying from sees where they're coming from and they're doing something to change and meet their needs. So I saw there was a big enough group of people that wanted to move quicker through the program. I didn't have a means for them to do that, so I made some advanced materials. Now, you won't know if that's the case for you until you launch. And if you only have 10% people leave the program and they're saying it's too slow, that's okay. Work with the 90% who are happy and just run with it. If you're getting closer to 50% of dropping out because it's too slow, then that's when you might need to say, okay, I might have my positioning slightly off and I can, let's move ahead and jump straight to the more advanced materials, or let's get something created to keep the advanced people busy while I build up to the advanced materials. But one thing I can guarantee you, if you do something, you'll learn about your customers, and that's the important thing.
Yes, exactly. No, that's fantastic. That positioning and the attrition based on, you know, it's too fast or slow. I know who I'm going after. And in that case, you know, 4 month or 6 month, it shouldn't be a problem because they'll be struggling probably a little at the beginning. So it shouldn't appear too slow for them. So that's helped me a lot. Thank you. I think that's all the questions I have.
No problem. One other tip with that, Michelle, do teleconferences. The good thing with teleconferences, you can deal with every level of problem and everyone feels they're getting some level of service then, even if the core materials aren't quite up to what they're wanting right then. Some people just want that personal contact.
I definitely plan to do that because I really appreciate them when you do them. So, that was definitely part of the plan.
Good stuff.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Michelle.
Bye.
Bye from Gideon too. All right, everyone. I'm seeing no hands raised, and we've almost hit an hour and a half. I'll give you guys one more shot. If you do have a question, just press *9. Otherwise, I will wrap up the call. There we go. All right, last two callers.
Hey, this is Valerie. I've got a question about my blog. I've been blogging for about a year now, and I have a good amount of traffic. I haven't done a lot of marketing lately, so I really need to get back on the bandwagon with that. But if I wanted to monetize, I'm overwhelmed with all of the monetization strategies, overwhelmed, such that I've done nothing in the way of monetizing. So what would you recommend if I want to monetize the blog as first steps for a blog that's about a year old? I've got over 100 articles on there and really working and building the audience. So what would you recommend as good monetization strategies to start with?
Most people begin with Google AdSense because it's the easiest to implement. It does most of the hard work for you. And it will give you an indication of what types of advertisements are showing on your blog. And that can give you an idea of what type of affiliate products to promote with next. So the usual progression is, let's put AdSense everywhere first, and that's it. I won't do anything else. Let's test that, see how it runs. I'll see how, you know, if I make a lot of money, I'm not going to change things. If it's not the kind of money I want, then I'll start swapping out AdSense for maybe some paid direct sponsorship. So I'll create an advertise page on the blog and invite sponsors to buy banners on my site. And then the next step is usually to write an affiliate review of a product that you've actually used yourself and recommend it to your readers and see whether you make any affiliate sales. So those three things are the three things I'd start with: AdSense, selling direct sponsorship advertisements, and doing affiliate product reviews. And you can build up from there.
Thank you.
No problem. All right, last caller.
Hey, Joe, how you doing? This is Hector from Latino Web Cafe. How's it going over there?
Good, thanks, Hector. How are you?
Doing well. Quick
Don't forget
question,
to say hello to Gideon.
And Gideon, yes. Good question.
Hi, Hector.
Hi, Gideon. So quick question. I was thinking the other day about mobile, and as I don't know where I came across the fact that there is a plugin for WordPress to that you can put that it will, if you are accessing the site from a mobile phone, it will adjust the format for that. The question is, have you had any experience with that sort of thing?
I've never actually applied it. I keep getting people inviting me to test a plugin that will make my blog more mobile friendly. And actually, I do have that on my to-do list somewhere because of, you know, iPhone. There's definitely a lot more interest there. I'm fairly certain they're quite good at what they do. They'll just take your, you know, your core content and make it presentable very simply. Like if you go to any site using an iPhone, you can often find they have an iPhone version that just shows like the latest news headlines as opposed to the entire site design. But I wouldn't go beyond finding a plugin or a service that creates a special version of your site, like /mobile or something like that. And you can, the tech people can answer this. Unfortunately, I don't think Gideon has played with this either, but there are ways to indicate to a browser which version of a site to show. So if it is a mobile browser, it will default to the mobile version of the website. So it's definitely possible.
Hector, also, what plugins have you looked at for that so far?
Well, the only one that I actually went on, and again, it was about an hour, I think I read something. I don't know if it was in ProBlogger or somewhere. And then what I did was I went to the WordPress.org and just searched for mobile, and there's a WordPress mobile, and I think they're up to version 3.something now. And I think what all you do is put the plugin, you know, install the plugin, follow the installation instructions, and then it will detect if you are accessing the site from a mobile phone. And then it will display it. If you're accessing from a mobile phone, then it will display it in a way that it's more readable on the mobile phone. So you don't have to do, all you have to do is put the plug in according to the documentation there. So I was wondering if there's any, if you guys have any experience with that, and then if there's any side effects that they may not be talking about or whatever.
Okay, well, I've found the plugin that you're looking for. It's called the WordPress Mobile Edition one. That's the one that comes up first when you do a search for mobile plugin for WordPress. So I'm thinking it's the same one there on version 3.1. So I might play around with it just to see, just for ourselves, for interest's sake, how it works. But I can't give you any answers on that right now, but maybe for the next call we may have some more information on that.
Sure, no problem. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay.
Okay. That's it from Hector. Thank you, Hector. Now, all right, that's all the questions answered. We got nothing in the forum, chat room, Gideon, that we need to deal with, I don't think.
Not that I've seen. There may have been a few questions that's been going around. I must say everyone in there has been pretty good helping each other out. So I think that's one of the functions of the chat room that, you know, you can all help each other out there if you want to. It's a great way of connecting with each other. We normally don't get too much time to interact in there because we're answering questions. But yeah, for future, please use that for helping to answer your own questions as well.
Yeah, we're male. We can't multitask. So I can speak and not look at a computer screen at the same time. It's too challenging. So that's it for the call. Thank you, everyone who's participated. Most of you have stayed on the entire hour and a half, so we really appreciate that. Hope you all got something out of the questions. We'll get the recording up shortly after this is done. It takes about an hour for it to process, and then I'll stick it up on the teleconferences page in the archive section. And I hope you can join us for the next call. I think we have a next call already booked in for next week, so we can get it in for July ends to have our at least our two calls a month. So if you haven't had a chance to ask your question this week, you can do so next week. And the forum is also available between now and then for you to ask any questions you might have before then. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from Gideon.
And we'll open up the line for everyone who is still here. You're welcome to shout out your name, where you're from, and your website address, your blog address. Good little last-minute promotion. So here we go.
Hey, Yara.
Hi, good night. Salah from Toronto.
Good night. Thank you very much. And from Alberta.
Portugal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Happy birthday, Yaro.
Thank you.
Is it Yaro's birthday?
Yeah.
2 days ago.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday,
dear Yaro.
Yaro. Happy birthday to you.
Joy from singingmastermind.com.
Citypeopletalk.com.
Thanks, everyone.
He looks 30. He looks more like 20.
Ciao.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. Bye, everyone.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.